everyone, it's Claire here, events manager for With a Slack Group, and I'm delighted to welcome you to the latest episode of Sensational, a special educational needs podcast. Our podcast is all about celebrating neurodiversity, strengthening our children's superpowers, and empowering parents, carers, and professionals with knowledge, advice, and support. I hope everybody finds today's episode not only useful, but enjoyable as well. And so after the relative isolation that the pandemic has brought to us, it suddenly feels like our lives have never been busier in a way. And it's amazing that schools and children are finally able to get back to the normal business of, you know, a sports day or a World Book Day, and we're able to see family, friends, and socialise and so on. However, keeping on top of it all certainly does test our organisational skills as adults and sometimes our patience as well. And so when we look at how difficult it is for us adults to keep on top of things, it's really important to look at the hurdles that our neurodiverse children face in their day-to-day when it comes to keeping themselves organised and planning, and of course staying calm when it doesn't all go to plan. So for today's podcast, we'll be focusing our attention on ADHD and the building blocks to being organised and staying calm. And so I'm pleased to welcome today's expert speaker, and that is Tracy Bowyer, Virtual School Coordinator for the ADHD Foundation Neurodiversity Charity. So welcome to the podcast, Tracy. So to begin with, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and your work?
Yeah, so my role within the ADHD Foundation is Virtual School Coordinator, which means that I support carers and parents of neurodiverse children. So we do assessments to see whether they might need sort of QB tests, any additional support that we might be able to provide day to day.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so we'll get started on our questions now. So can you tell us a little bit about why being organised can be difficult for children and young people with ADHD?
Well, I think being organised and time management in general can be difficult for any children, but especially for those with ADHD. And what we find is it's often due to difficulties with the development of executive functioning skills. So executive functioning skills are basically the brain's way of regulating our thinking, our feelings, and behaviour to complete a goal or a task. So it's basically the brain's self-management system. It helps us to be able to plan, organise, and manage any tasks that we need to do every day. So what we find is for some of our young people, they might have difficulties with some of these skills, and it could be a whole host of things, really. So it can be with planning and prioritising, for example. So just being able to set a priority, you know, being able to get materials organised to be able to do a task, being able to distinguish between information that's relevant and not relevant as well, anticipating events and planning for the future as well, so things like that. And organisation in general, you know, just being able to get your things together to be able to do a task. Organising your personal space as well, you know, your desk, your locker, your bag, all those types of things, your bedroom.
When you list them like that, there's so many things for them to like keep on top of as well, isn't there, you know?
Yeah, and we don't really think about it. So we just kind of think it's just part and parcel of everyday life. But when we actually break executive functioning skills down, there's so much to it and so many demands on our young people. And then if you think about, so with all those things, actually just being able to start the task. So being able to think, okay, I need to stop what I'm doing now and start a new task as well, you know. So it can be really, really difficult. And then on top of that, you know, a lot of our young people have difficulties with their work and memory. So that can be like holding information in their mind while they're using it. So, for example, if you give someone directions, remembering those directions, recalling facts. So if someone asks you something, you know, being able to access that part of your memory, but hold the request in your mind in the first instance to be able to recall that information. So that involves using your working memory while you're accessing your long-term memory as well.
You realize everything that's going on, do you? While you're like trying to, you just like go through things and everything, but you don't realize everything when you put it like that. You have to hold that thought and everything. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And then that impacts on, obviously, you know, being able to maintain attention, manage what you're supposed to be focusing on without being distracted as well. And distractions, not necessarily. So, yes, we do know that, you know, for some of our young people, they may struggle with physical distractions, but as well, their own thoughts, you know, their own thoughts can be a distraction in itself as well. So just because we're not seeing them glancing around the room and off to do other things, we often see some young people.
Yeah, whirling around in the head sort of thing.
Yeah. And then on top of that, there's, you know, a lot more. There's time management skills, being able to plan time effectively, being aware of the passage of time as well, just putting off tasks, estimating how long to complete the tasks. And it's just, it's endless, really.
I was just going to say, it seems endless. You sound like it could just keep going.
Yeah.
So that gives us a little bit of an idea, really, doesn't it, about why it can be so difficult. So we'll move on now. I must message, you know, the other mums that have children in my children's school at least once a week, you know, to check that I've got the days right for the kids' PA, because I'm really bad at keeping on top of things like that. And getting my children to swimming on time after work is always really tricky as well. And you know, like I was saying before, it can be difficult at the best of times for us adults to keep on top of the things that we need to. And so what advice can you offer on how we can support our children when it comes to time management, organisational and planning skills?
I think ultimately preparation is
key. Okay. Yeah. And it's hard when we're busy and everything, but it's going to make a difference, isn't it?
Yeah. And it really is. And I think, you know, initially, you know, we may have to do that preparation, but what I would say is we want our young people to be independent as well. So encourage them to think about what are they going to need for, you know, whether that's for their bag for the next day for school, whether that's to complete a task, whether that's to sit and eat an evening meal, practice that preparation as well with them. You know, that can be a really, I would say as well, you know, weekends and holidays can be a great time to really practice those skills, rather than doing it when you know you're going to be rushed midweek.
So when you've got that sort of break in the routine sort of thing, it's a bit of time to
practice. I would also say as well, when we are thinking about that preparation and practice, externalize it for our young people as well. So, you know, in our minds, we have sort of an inner dialogue going on. We'll be talking to ourselves. Sometimes for our young people, they may not necessarily have that, or just because we know what we're doing and why we're doing it, they may not. So it could be, you know, I'm getting the bag ready for tomorrow so that in the morning, but just externalize it, have that dialogue. What are you doing and why are you doing it? And then that's just setting a really good example for them for when they are starting to think about preparing things for themselves.
That's a fantastic example of something that, you know, we can all implement that sort of straight away, can't we? You know, we can all do that, you know, just in our day-to-day sort of thing. I'll make note of that one for my
because we don't think about it, we just do it, and then we expect our young people to be able to just do it. And unfortunately, you know, that's not always the case. And then when we are expecting them to do things, they may not know why we are the expectations there. So just letting them know that as well. Things, yeah, write it down, get it down. It's a list, it's a calendar, it's the calendar in your phone, depending on yourself and your young person. Again, practice it, whatever's best for them. For younger children, it might be that you're using schedules and routines and visuals to support that planning and time management and establishing routines. For older young people, it might be that you're starting to think about setting reminders into their phone, using sort of diaries or visual planners that they use at school. But again, get it written down. You know, if it's written down, then they can refer back to it. I always say make it visual. The beauty of using technology is we can also set reminders. We can set them the day before, 15 minutes before, on, you know, at the moment.
Yeah, brilliant.
So again, use timers, and that again can support track of time. We can use the timers as well. If they have got a task and they need to do it within a certain amount of time, to set that amount of time as well. What we find for some young people with ADHD, sometimes they do actually work better under pressure if they've got they've got a time limit to do something.
Yeah.
So if that's the case for your young person, then setting that timer is going to be supportive. But it can also help with young people who just don't understand how, you know, the passage of time, it's just gone in an instant.
When they're trying to sort of get their head around time, I know we've been doing it with one of our girls, and when I'm trying to explain it myself and I understand it, it's a tricky concept. It really is.
It is, because it's so abstract. And so externalizing, let's make it visual, and then that supports their understanding of it as well. And then I think as well, it's definitely about, you know, thinking about how much we're expecting our young people to do at once. Can we break those tasks down? Can we chunk them? And even things like, you know, we'll say, tidy your room, you know, and it's
massive task. And you like,
huge, yeah. So can it be, okay, put all your washing in the laundry basket? The first test, then, you know, can you put all your books on the shelf? Can you put all your shoes in the cupboard?
Layering it up.
Absolutely, yeah. And what I always say as well, a lot of our young people with ADHD respond really well to rewards and motivating activities. So can we have a task followed by some sort of motivating activity in between as well? Keeps them on track, and again, use your timer so that you know how long that they've got for each stage, and then, you know, it's likely to be more effective than saying go in and tidy your room.
No, I mean, already this, like, thank you so much, Tracy, because there's so much information and support that you provide in here. So I really do, it's fantastic to have you on the podcast today. So we'll move on now. So can you provide an example of when you've worked with a child and give us an idea of what they were specifically struggling with, what support tools were put in place, and how they use them tools to help them manage things a little better?
Okay, so endless examples, really, I suppose. But I always try and think of situations that happen frequently when people ask me for examples of things. So there's a number of young people, but one young person in particular who was really anxious of a morning, really distressed when leaving home and arriving at school. What was happening was mornings were quite rushed. Parents had other children to get ready. But then as well, being told, you know, you haven't brushed your hair yet, you haven't cleaned your teeth yet, go and do this, go and do it. So that was sort of how the morning sort of started. Parents, mum found it particularly stressful trying to coordinate everything. Then when the young person got to school, they were met at the door by a different member of staff every day, which wasn't good for this young person. They liked this transitions to be very structured and routine. And then as well, if there was going to be any changes, there was quite often no preparation given. So it could be that it's been the same person all weekend, then on the Friday someone else would change and there would be no preparation, so then that could just sort of disrupt his day for the rest of the day. Also found it really difficult to maintain attention and keep up in class, was being frequently told off for not listening, not doing work, not keeping still, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So when we unpicked it a little bit, there was things that we could support for at home and in school.
Yeah.
So we looked at you introducing for him a visual checklist. So this young man, he just had a little list of what he needs to do in the morning. It was laminated. He had a whiteboard pen and he would just tick off what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. Now, initially, he did need prompt and he did need to be sort of told, go look at your checklist. What's up next on your checklist? But as that became part of his routine and established, then, you know, he was able to, with very little prompting, get himself organised and ready. Really? Yeah. It was also with mum again talking about that preparation the night before, all the bags done, all the clothes out.
Yeah.
But as well to promote independence, thinking about in the holidays and at weekends when there was less pressure, doing what I talked about before about all that practice in terms of being able to do that for himself. And then in school, they arranged for the same member of staff to meet him every morning. But if that was going to change, then they would just send mum a text
so she
could let him know on the way to school.
Yeah.
And it wasn't great because he was prepared for the change.
Yeah, which all morning they arrived. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we talked about, you know, so in class, it was his understanding of what was happening next. So a visual timetable there was a visual timetable in the class, but it wasn't being utilised properly. So that they just made sure that they started to utilise it more effectively. And he got his own visual timeline on his desk where he could take his little Velcro pieces off every time a task has ended as well. Mm-hmm. So that just supported him. And then as well, what we discovered was in terms of him being able to pay attention, you know, he was sat with other pupils either side of him. He was in close proximity to a door, which was frequently left open.
Going past,
coming in, sat in a position where he couldn't really see the whiteboard very well. So again, we just looked at where he was sitting. So he wasn't sat by windows, doors. He has one peer next to him. And that just supports his ability to focus
and concentrate in class. Brilliant. Okay. Oh, well, thanks so much for sharing that example with us. Some great information there for home and for school as well. So moving on now, what about support strategies? You know, when we're out and about in the community, have you got any suggestions for what we could do here?
Yeah, so again, you know, the community variable, isn't it, about what can happen, and usually anything does happen. Yeah, so again, I would be providing those external cues, that narrative, what you're doing, why you're doing it, how long you're going to be doing it, preparing them for what's going to happen through the day as well. Again, you know, the evening before, if there's a planned activity, so swimming, for example, again, what do they need? Ideal opportunity to practice all that stuff again, you know, what do you need? What do you think you need to put in your bag? Then thinking about, you know, it may be that you're taking them to swimming, but as well thinking about independence, you know, do they know the route? Have they got money management skills as well? That can be quite a big thing as well. So how do they manage cash? Are they able to budget, for example?
Yeah.
Are they able to plan for their activities? Do they know how much money they have for the weekend? Do they need to plan that accordingly for each day? Things like that as well. I think as well what we need to be really conscious of, not just in the community in general, but definitely in the community, is sensory differences as well. So if we are going somewhere, sensory differences can definitely be a challenge for some of our young people. So what I would be thinking about is the environment that we're going to as well. You know, can we go to places at quieter times if need be? Can we go and visit them in advance? Can we show pictures of them? Tell them what to expect when they get there. If they are struggling, what is going to be the backup plan? What is the exit plan if need be? Is there any strategies we can give them to be able to manage? So if you know that, you know, it's unavoidable, unfortunately, you've just got to go into the supermarket and it's a Saturday and it's not the ideal day. You would never have normally picked it. What can you do to support them? So it could be that before they go, you know, they've got some calming activities. So things like chewy snacks can be calming, sports bottle drinks, something weighted across the legs, you know, not everyone has weighted lap pads, but, you know, can have you got anything that you can just sort of fit across the legs? Something that they find comforting, maybe, something tactile, an activity that they find calming. It could be something on the iPad, music through the headphones as well. Just load up on a number of tools. Just to try and get through.
That planning and preparation and things like that, doesn't it? You know,
I mean, I've got a neurodiverse family, and my car is like everything's in there permanently with just in case, because every day is unpredictable.
Moving on now. So this next question is one of the reasons why we decided to look into doing a podcast that focused on this topic, as it was something that parents said their children really struggled with, and that is getting ready and preparing for the day ahead. We've touched on it already a little bit, but parents have mentioned that sometimes their child gets so distressed in the morning, just trying to get everything together, that, you know, that they've left the house and they're in a wobble, and that's before they've even made it to school. So it's a hard start to the day for both the child and in turn the parents. So you've touched on some strategies already, actually, but any other strategies that we could offer here?
Yeah, I think my main strategy, something that I definitely do every day, is I try and start my mornings as calmly as possible. You know, so
it sometimes, though, I know myself, trying to get ready for work, get everybody ready for school, it can be really hard. But yeah, definitely, if I've been calmer in the morning, it's just set for a better day, really.
And I think this is the thing as well. So, you know, I think modelling things for our young people is really important as well, just the same as it is with talking them through tasks. So if we think about, if we are running around chaotically of a morning, then we are modelling, this is how we get ready of a morning. So it always comes back again to, you know, just being prepared. If do as much as you can. So quite often I say the night before, but for me, I'm a morning person. I get up an hour before everyone else needs to be up. It depends on you as an individual. So I'm up an hour before, I have all the bags ready, all the lunches ready. And get myself organized. You've got to do what fits in with you and your family. So whether it's the evening before or that morning, you know, the clothes are laid out. Make sure they're ironed, and you know, there's nothing worse than getting the clothes out and they need ironing. And but build it into your routine, make it your routine, and then initially these things, you know, it is exhausting, it can be exhausting, but actually what happens is when they become your routine, you're doing them without thinking about them. It's like having some way where you always put your car keys, you know, you just do it automatically. And that's what we want. So we want it to be just part and parcel of everyday life, and then it stops being difficult. It's, you know, so it is about being consistent. Again, when we're thinking about mornings, how are you young people waking up? Are you sort of opening the curtains? Come on, time to get up, we're going to be later. You know,
each one's different though as well. Sometimes each child's different. I've got two girls that share a room. One of them is just like springs out of bed, like, yep, ready to go. One of them needs about 20 minutes to sort of get going. It's like still rubbing the sleep away from their eyes, you know.
And it's like anything, it's really individual. So, you know, for those that do need a bit longer, you know, can we just give them that nudge, let them wake up gradually, but then we know that we need to be up 20 minutes. We need to be waking them up 20 minutes to do that. You know, can they have, so my little girl have a calming music on, for example. The sports bottle drink comes out, because if you think about a baby sucking a bottle, a sports bottle drink, the smaller the hole, the better. It's nice and calming as well. If they can have a chewy breakfast, great. Prompts and countdown. So I never just say, come on, do this. It's 5 minutes, then this.
Yeah,
Yeah. So can we introduce things like that as well, just so that we're not springing, we're not expecting those transitions to happen, you know, straight away. Yeah. And it can be difficult. It really can. And I know because I live it. But if you be consistent. So for me, for example, what used to be a 2-hour routine with me and my little girl is now 15 minutes because and she trusts the schedule. She's trusts the routine and she knows exactly what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose the other thing as well is to not be, I suppose, a bit disheartened for the day. You know, you could do all this planning and preparation and there'll be some days that it still might not work out. And it's accepting that, I guess, and moving on and just keep trying and keep being positive about it.
And finding out what works for your family, because what works for me, what works for you isn't necessarily it is, yeah. And I would say if you're going to introduce something new, try and do it, you know, during holidays or something. One of my key things as well is, you know, don't let that routine go in the holidays. During COVID, I maintained our routine even when, because I knew how difficult it would be to get back into it. It's so easy to just sort of think, oh, it's the holidays, we don't, you know, we can relax a little bit. You can make it more difficult for yourself. Obviously, you know, again, it's individual, but if you think that that's going to create more challenges, then maintain it as well, weekends, holidays, rather than having to sort of go back to it.
Back to the start again. Yeah, no, it makes sense. Okay, so another big one for schools and parents, you know, we often hear about it, is homework. It's a really popular question on the webinars that we do. And, you know, it's how can we support children with their homework? Some parents have said the struggle is actually getting them to do it. Others have said that it's the organising around it, you know, when it needs to be in for. But then others have also said it's, you know, they've done it and then they just keep forgetting to hand it in. So what's your advice here and how can we as parents and carers help our children?
I think with struggling to get them to do it, you know, ideally, can we have a conversation with school? Can there be is homework club available? Can they do and have time to do homework in school? But it should never, ever replace breaks, you know.
Yeah. Because then it becomes like thing.
So one of the schools I go into, they have it's a choice. They have various clubs, and one of the clubs that young people can choose to go to for part of their lunch is homework club, but it's a choice.
Yeah.
So there's a young man that I support who chooses to go in and do, because for him schoolwork and home's home, and actually he would prefer. Just
when you think about it, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of if it's got to be done at home, you know, can we, again, it's about embedding it into that routine. Can we externalize it? So, you know, this is how long you're going to do this task for, then you're going to do a motivating task. But before you even sit them down to do the homework, we need to be thinking about the environment. Where are you expecting them to do it? Is it in the kitchen where there's a lot of people coming and going? You know, the wash machine's on, the fridge is buzzing, the dog's barking.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's the environment? Is it free from distractions? Is it organized? Do they know where everything is? Have they got everything they need? And because that in itself, if we think about all those executive function and difficulties that they may have, before they even sit down to do the homework, is it any wonder they don't want to do the homework, really?
All that around them. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes deadlines can help. For those young people who, you know, with a bit of pressure, they're more likely to do it. You know, can we give them the deadlines? But certainly, you know, again, plan and preparation. If it's a big piece of work, can we break it down to do, you know, certain nights we're going to do certain things as well, and just using those chunking skills, really, and those planning skills.
Okay. And so when we look at things like homework and school and things like that, another thing to take into consideration is the school's response, you know, to a child being organised or disorganised, as the case may be. You know, I've heard lots of various scenarios from how schools are really supportive and understanding when it comes to the difficulties a child may face. And sadly, you know, I do hear about when schools are less supportive as well. So how can parents work on the relationship with the school to help them develop a greater understanding of a child, you know, in order to meet their needs? And have you got any sort of real life examples you can share as well?
It can be really frustrating when, yeah, you know, a school, you know, isn't sort of taking your concerns. And quite often what we hear is, well, you know, that's not how they present in school and you may be seeing something, yes, different. But yeah, I get that quite a lot. And I think it's about, you know, it's staying calm, asking for that meeting, explain, go in prepared, go in explaining everything that you're seeing at home, the strengths of your young person, what works really well for them. What's working really well at home, because that's important as well, because it could be that those strengths are not being utilized in school. So I think we need to, quite often we focus on what isn't working, but actually what is working. I know a lot of families during COVID found strategies when they were supporting with homeschooling that worked really well. I think so that's been a really good way of saying, look, when we were at home doing this worked really well. But go in prepared, because you will forget, you know, jot everything down, explain, and just see, it's, you know, can you set some goals and some targets that you can be put in place to support your young person. We need to keep those, you know, whether we're communicating sort of face-to-face or by email, it's just stay calm, you know, we want to be professional, we want to advocate appropriately, but be firm as well, you know, say that these are my young person's challenges, this will help, can we implement it as well. So, you know, ask for that meeting, whether it be with the Senko or the class teacher, and don't be fobbed off, you know, clarify everything in an email so you've got that paper trail as well. I mean, I'm fortunate, really, you know, the nature of my job, I work with some fantastic schools, you know, I really do. And what I find is the most successful schools are usually those schools who approach support from a whole school approach. You know, so it's not necessarily, because again, I've sort of been in some schools where this class does it this way, but this class does it that way, and when they transition, there's difficulties. So, you know, can schools adopt that whole school approach? Do they include timetables across the board for every child?
Yeah.
You know, do they include movement breaks for every child? Do they think movement then brain before asking to do a task? Is there access to sensory circuit provision? Is there opportunities to break tasks down to support those that need it? But that whole school approach can just be so helpful. And then for those that need that little bit more individualized support, it's not such a big step, you know, and they're not standing up because
board sort
of thing. The board, and I definitely think, and even the environment, you know, is it low stimulus, is it uncluttered, is it labeled so that they know where everything is, is there some sensory tools available, so TheraBands on chair legs for those young people that need them, different types of seating, can they stand while they're working, those types of strategies to support young people. And as well, education is everything. So I would direct any staff, I mean, ourselves and with a Slack, put amazing resources on for professionals as well. So, you know, access information, resources and training to be able to understand the needs of our young people.
Yeah. Absolutely. Really, really sound advice there. And so we're coming to close, like to the end of our podcast now. We've got two more questions left. And when we're moving on to the next question, I liked we were doing some prep via email in the build up to the podcast. And on the next one, Tracy said best laid plans, which sort of nails it really. So there are likely to be occasions when supporting children and young people where they do become distressed, isn't there? You know, yes. They're struggling to find their calm. So yeah. What can we do here in that moment to help them?
Absolutely. And no matter what we do, unfortunately, you know, these things. And in an ideal world, we will see those signs and triggers, but, you know, not necessarily, that might not be obvious. And I think what we need to do is, the main thing is keep our young people safe. That's ultimately what the priority, you know, are they safe? Is everybody else safe? And, you know, but if we can support them, if we can, again, practice when they're a bit calmer, so that when they do become dysregulated, things like breathing techniques. So you can use the hand breathing, where you breathe in as you go up your thumb, out as you go down, and do the same for each finger. Or, you know, the box breathing. So as you go down each side, in as you're going up, and across, as you out as you're going across, smell the flower, blow the candle out, those types of things. Let's, you know, practice breathing techniques, mindfulness techniques as well. So if we think about, can they, this works quite well with some of the young people I've worked, practiced again beforehand, and when, then in the moment, it's, can you tell me 5 things you can see? So we're getting them to start, you know, can you tell me 4 things you can touch? Can you tell me 3 things you can hear? 2 things you can smell, 1 thing you can taste, and just to try and bring them back, ground them.
That's, I've not heard that one before, but that is fantastic. Yeah.
And I just think, again, it's like, you know, don't rely on it just in the moment. These are things, practice beforehand. Can you have access to things that may work for your young person? So not everything will work for every young person, but for some young people, things like weighted items can help. So weighted blankets, lap pads, teddies or toys, body warmers, backpacks, can we have them available? Resistive type fidgets, or even blue tack, for example, can quite often help. Anything that's got sort of gentle rocking or rhythmic type activities, listening to calming music. And again, it's just about having that toolkit there that for your young person, you know, to help them. And I think what I always say is, and I've seen it many a time in a school, when they are calming down, that is not the time to talk about what's happened and why they felt like that as well. So what we want to do is, it might even be the next day, but then we talk about it and what would have helped that young person. What do they think would have prevented it in the first place, or helped them calm down, just to stop them sort of getting to the top of that that curve, really.
Yeah. Okay. Really, really good advice there. So our last sort of point or question for the day is the title for the podcast is The Building Blocks for Being Organized and Staying Calm. And so as we close the session, it would be great if we could finish with you telling us your top 5 building blocks when it comes to this topic.
So when I was thinking about this, I've changed it so many times. I've cheated a little bit. So planning has to be there, you know, that planning has, it just has to be. And then straight after that is the preparation. Planning and preparation have got to be the 2 key parts. Modeling and practicing as well, you know, whether that be in preparation for when it goes wrong, or just to externalise what it is you're doing. Definitely modeling. Establishing routines and being consistent, definitely. And my final favourite is, try and have a toolkit to support regulation. Try and have that, just things that your young person's go-to pieces of kit.
That'll just bring down to baseline again.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I mean, that was fantastic. Really was. There's so much advice jam-packed in there. And all I need to do is listen to it once a week and I'll know where I am for being organized for my week ahead. So that just about brings us to the end of today's podcast. So I'd like to say a massive thank you to you, Tracy, for your time today. A really, really brilliant session. And also thank you to our listeners for joining us. If you've enjoyed listening today, you might want to check out the other resources we have on the With a Slack Group website, where we have a wide range of support materials covering a range of needs, including ADHD, autism, mental health, and also things like the education, health and care plans as well. So for more information, please do visit the website. It's withaslackgroup.co.uk/resources. So thanks again to Tracy. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for having me.
On another episode in the future.